And welcome to That Horror Cast. I'm Mallory Smart.
And I'm Dmitry Samarov.
On today's episode, we'll be discussing the 2007 indie horror film, The Signal. The Signal is told in three parts from three perspectives when a mysterious transmission invades every cell phone, radio, and television, evoking violent, uncontrollable, psychotic chaos from everyone who comes in contact with it.
Is the coffee warm enough today?
Yes,
not
it is.
Not unlike yesterday. Is it new coffee, not rewarm coffee, or is it?
Yeah, it's new coffee.
There you go. Good to have the new coffee.
Yeah, you know, you start the day, you need it right away. I actually woke up right as you messaged me.
Oh, really?
And I was just like, isn't that funny? I'm usually the one who wakes up first.
Yep, it happened. Yeah, you know. Went to bed a little earlier.
You gotta do what you gotta do. Was it because you were like, oh my god, I need to talk about The Signal?
Yes, I had a very urgent need to speak about The Signal. I had to turn The Signal off in my home so I could get some sleep. So I could talk about The Signal the next day.
Oh, well, we've all been there. That was a surprisingly good movie for something that seems like it was on a low budget. I don't actually know.
It said, I think $50,000. That's ultra low.
That's nothing
for a movie. Yeah,
that is cheap. I'm proud of that.
Yeah,
because
no,
they did good.
They did an amazing. This is yet an example 5 billion 30 whatever that constraints and are good for art.
Mm-hmm.
Because. You see something like this, and then you see Oppenheimer, which, they spent more money than God ever had on, and it's terrible.
I was so disappointed with that movie.
The worst.
It was so overhyped.
It's weird that, for me at least, Christopher Nolan and David Fincher have now made two of the worst movies of the year.
Yeah, you're not the only one now who said that the David Fincher one isn't great. So,
oh, somebody else said it was bad? Yeah. I went on Rotten Tomatoes. It got a lot of good reviews, which is insane to me. It's terrible. It's really, really bad.
I think people, get way too excited about a movie, and then they see it, and they just don't want to admit it.
I guess. Well, I mean, I only look at the real the paid critics,
Mm-hmm.
I don't because Rotten Tomatoes has just the
fans
fan reviews. I never look at those. I look at the ones that write for papers.
Yeah. One second.
Yep.
Hello.
Where'd you go?
I had to really quickly take my cat off the counter. I didn't want you to hear me yell at her, so I was just I'm just going to go grab her.
Maybe she had it. Maybe she liked the killer. Maybe she liked the David Fincher. She wanted to defend the David Fincher movie.
Oh, in a Dead Poets Society way?
I don't know. Who knows?
Next thing I know, she's just going to be my captain.
Yeah. Right. That's right. My captain is David Fincher.
Exactly.
It's too bad. No, I mean, for mainstream, I'm not usually a big fan of mainstream movies, but those two guys are super talented and competent, and I like most of what they make. But these were just two turds. I don't know. They put some turds in the water. A couple of floaters here. Yeah, in contrast to this other movie, which is, it's from a while ago, but still, $50,000 for a feature movie is nothing.
I'm not used to 2007 being spoken about as a while ago.
I know. In my memory, this was a recent movie, but this movie came out, it came out, I think, they released it at the beginning of 08, I think, in theaters, because I saw it in the theater. So it would be beginning of 08. But yeah, that's 15 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, then it does date itself when you see the actual tech they're all using.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, obviously, yeah, the phones are a lot more primitive and stuff. But the set, you know, the setup and the point of it is, you know, more relevant than ever.
You know? That's what I was gonna say, is I wonder what it would have been like if it was made now. I mean, obviously, that's actually the weirdest thing, when even a recent movie, it would totally have a dynamic shift because of, say, Twitter or X, the thing that was formerly known as Twitter. I don't know what we're saying.
No, but it would work. The setup they came up with would totally work for any age. You know, this is like one of those body snatchers things, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is it'd be cool to, like, add an extra level. Because every Body Snatchers movie added, like, another, like, kind of touch that made it more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. One thing, I'd watched this movie a couple of times over the years, but I don't usually look on IMDb, because I don't like IMDb for some reason, but...
I haven't been on that since they got rid of the forums.
That's where you're like the shit talk.
I usually like to see what other people. I guess like that's what Letterboxd basically was.
Yeah, I guess Letterboxd is now the new forums for IMDb. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like in high school. I would go on that a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know they had forums. I was always.
I was never a participant. Just someone who read.
Yeah. No, I always prefer Wikipedia when it's available, but this movie doesn't have a wiki page, so...
I think it does, actually.
Oh, it does? Oh, I couldn't find it. Maybe it was further down in the search results, I don't know. And because The Signal is such a common name, there's many movies called this, and things, records and other things called The Signal, books, you know?
It's such a common... The Signal is a 2007 American horror film by David Bruckner.
Oh, maybe I did look at it.
It is told in three parts. Yes, that would be it.
Yeah, maybe I did see it. No, but on IMDb, it said that the reason the city is called Terminus, that was the original name for Atlanta, which is where this was shot.
Everything is filmed there these days. Wow.
A lot of stuff, yeah. But this was early. I mean, they were based there, and they'd been working, these three directors, they've worked together for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know too much about what they've gone on to do. The main guy, the kind of like the romantic hero guy, was in some other horror movies later. He was in one of the Final Destination movies.
You know, there are too many Final Destination movies to keep up. I think I stopped on that one with, like, the second one. I think I watched another one, but I have no idea which one it is. It just had to do with, like, NASCAR.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of Final Destination more than the execution.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say the beginning of Final Destination 2 is one of the best, like, action shots I've ever seen with the logs. On the highway. That's
every
so
millennial
great.
Jokes around about that scene traumatized us, so we can't drive behind that.
Right, but that's one of the most amazing set pieces I think in movie history.
Like, it's just the slow motion of like there they
where
go.
You see it. Yeah, where you see what's going to happen. You know, like you see it, and it's totally like talk about Gaper's delay. You know, like yeah, it's fantastic, but.
I've recently learned I'm not allowed to make fun of Final Destination on airplanes. I guess Belen is afraid of that. And I made a joke because we were flying on Friday the 13th. And for some reason, a Final Destination thing came up on my news. And I was like, oh, shit, we should probably get off this plane as a joke.
Because that's the setup for the first one there on the plane. On the plane, yeah. Like, no, I love
like,
this
is a very unlucky day.
Yeah. Not unlike the premise of The Signal, the premise of Final Destination's evergreen, you know? Mm-hmm. I think at some point, and I bet we could track down a movie that does it better. The fact that, you know, like the idea that you cheat fate, you know? And then the fate, death comes for you because your time has come and you're on extra, extra time that you didn't earn, you know?
I mean, I think we're all living on borrowed time as it is. So.
Really? Yeah. Wow. How have you come to the...
Am I the only one who's had a lot of near-death experiences, or...
I guess.
Okay, I just kind of keep going through that shit.
Oh, okay.
Where I'm like, that should have killed me.
How many would you say?
You know, I'm not going to put an exact figure on it.
A baker's dozen.
And be like, you know, like if I wanted to write that kind of thing, then I could. But I want to stay away from my life. as we discussed yesterday. Now. Right.
Yeah, on a different podcast.
Exactly. I would have to say, I want to know, which of the three parts did you like best?
I guess probably the first one. Probably the first. Well, because it sets everything up, I guess. I'm not sure, but they're sort of. Yeah, they're sort of. I think they intentionally are a little bit. Each one's a little bit of a different genre, you know.
I really like Transmission too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the dinner, the lady that keeps wanting to just have a dinner party.
Yeah.
And then she's just not allowed to have, she's all
like,
dressed
do I
up.
Cancel
and
the party?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And yeah. I like the guy who just shows up, like, totally unaware that anything is happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun because it is one story, but it's, you know, there's time gaps and kind of rewinds. And it's from each one is from a different angle,
mm-hmm.
and each one focuses on a different. You know, I mean, the first one is Maya, the second one is Lewis, and the third one is Ben. You know,
mm-hmm.
really the main character. You know, the focus.
Yeah, we have our like love triangle going on.
Yeah, and it's really just a love triangle movie with a lot of violence and a lot of blood.
You know, given the premise, I thought it was going to be a lot more violent, and yeah, I'm happy it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's gory enough, you know. Like,
it's more like assumed gore.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
is the best. I mean, people often remark it's the thing that you can imagine or just off frame that's much more terrifying than any effect anybody could come up with.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah, they go pretty far with the one guy. What is his name? The guy who ends up with just a head.
God,
Ron. His name is Ron.
He's a black guy. No,
yeah,
Rod.
The black Rod. Yeah, who builds an amazing like that spear thing with kitchen with kitchen knives and duct tape, where he's just killing people.
I always like his lines. That was just like, he was like, do you have the crazy? These are wild times. I guess this happens to everybody. Like,
yeah, I clicked on it. I did go to the wiki because they used to have a website. And it was do you have the crazy.com, but it expired. It doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately.
That's just sad.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep paying the server fees. Why would you, you know?
Well,
man,
you know,
I
you wouldn't get it because you'd like to take everything down when you're done with it.
Yeah. Well, I actually even bought ChicagoHack.com for a while when I thought it was going to be a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was maintaining it for a few years, you know, and just kept some stuff on there and kept the teaser clips that John had shot and stuff. But then I gave up on it. Then I went back. And looked, and you know, whoever those vultures just sit on it and demand like thousands of dollars, you know, to buy it back.
That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still annoyed that I couldn't get MaldonHouse.com, so
yeah.
I feel your pain.
Well, now you can do like, you know, MaldonHouse.whatever. You can make up like I forget what the ending is called, but, you know, since they've expanded it, it could be modelinhouse.books.horror.whatever.
I was so pissed off, but I feel a sense of victory. There is actually a hotel called Maldon House. I didn't know that. So they dominated everything. But
that's what modelinhouse.com is the hotel?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know that because when I was when you first suggested my designing a T-shirt for you guys, I did an image search for a modeling house.
Oh, okay.
And it came up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see other images that it would suggest, you know, the term modeling house.
That's pretty funny.
Where did the modeling house that you guys use, where is that from?
You know, I can't actually remember the name of the artist who did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was so long ago.
But you commissioned, you asked somebody to do that?
Yeah.
But it's it's like an old wooden house, you know?
Basically, yeah.
It's like the house from Haunted Hill or something. You know, it looks like a horror movie house.
I just like that we kept changing the design of the, like, where we had the logo. At first, we actually had it where most people didn't know exactly. I know it was so depressing how to pronounce Maudlin House.
Yeah.
So we had it where, like, the logo was in that area so they knew where to, like, pronounce it. Mm. And then at another point, we had it in the eye, I think. Like the above the eye in Maudlin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you
People
know.
People are strange.
Yeah, and you have to, the look of your thing has to evolve, and you get bored with it or whatever you want to improve. I've done so many redesigns on my website, like just layout and stuff, and what page links to what background colors, all kinds of stuff. And it always takes so long. It takes so long if you're the one doing it, you know?
It really does. That's why before we used to only do 12 issues, we would do a monthly issue instead.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea how we got here, but yeah.
That's okay. This is what we do. This is our brand.
We just kind of go off into other subjects, yeah.
Yes, completely unrelated tangents.
But isn't that what happens in The Signal a lot?
It does. It does. They're wandering around. I mean, in the half those people at the dinner party were not invited. You know, most of the people I think the only person that was invited was the best friend. You know, who survives to the third one, you know?
Mm-hmm. The weird dude who kept talking about how he wanted to get
who
some...
Ends,
yeah.
Who? No. Well, there was the one guy that wandered in who kept talking about sex.
Yeah.
Who Lewis eventually puts out of his misery. No, I mean the guy that is outside with the car when Maya and Rod pull up.
I think he's the landlord.
Right, he's the landlord, but he's the friend of the couple.
Yeah.
That is giving the party. But the husband's already dead. Or about to be dead.
I like that she kind of like just left him there and was like, the party will go on.
Well, she wanted to be the hostess with the mostess. You know, she was just really laser focused on having her party. She didn't care who. Like, she could put in who the husband is. It doesn't matter, you know, who her husband is. Yeah, she was sort of like some kind of weird Stepford wife or something, or like, I don't know, cheerleader, homecoming queen. You know, she was really dressed up and stuff,
mm-hmm.
in contrast to everybody else who was pretty casual, you know?
It definitely looked like you've never watched Mad Men, have you?
Yeah, I watched Mad Men.
Yeah, so it definitely looked like the wives who were planning dinner parties then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was like some kind of like spark, kind of throwback dress, you know, from another time. Not from the early 2000s for sure, you know.
Definitely not. So that was definitely a very fun film to cap off for my Halloween because I didn't know what else to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was your final Halloween movie? For Halloween, this year's Halloween.
My official Halloween movie. I mean, Blent and I haven't had a chance to celebrate it really at this moment, so.
No?
No. We said we're just going to make a lot of November Halloween too.
Oh, really? You're going to recreate Halloween in November now that it's November?
Yeah, basically. It's one of those things. I miss Egypt, but I'm also like, that fucking trip took like half a fall away from me.
You resent your honeymoon.
It's funny. It's a love hate because I'm like, it was so fun, but it took half of my favorite season. Like, I just need to keep it going.
Well, let's hope it sticks and you never have to do it again. not unlike the couple in our movie, which, you know, it's not a happy marriage, and one of them can't make his peace with it, that it's over, and goes to extreme lengths to preserve the sanctity of marriage.
There was like a moment in the film where I was just like, I could see why Dimitri picked this, when I was like, it's the technology. The technology is getting to everybody. But then I like realized the marriage aspect, and I was like, maybe this is why I picked it. Which theme was Dimitri leaning on?
There's so many messages that I could be sending to you through this movie. So many signals I could be sending you.
You really were.
Through the signal, yeah. It's a cautionary tale about stupid technology and marriage, relationships.
It's like, you know, Dimitri told me so many times, like, you know, if I listen to my white noise off of my, I'll just call it Google, if it responds, whatever, that it'll infiltrate my mind, or that I trust technology too much. And then the running theme of marriage we like to make fun of. By we, I mean you.
That's right. Yeah, and I didn't even. I mean, when I don't know. I don't know exactly why I thought of this movie when I did. I think maybe it was.
Is it your subconscious? Probably.
Yeah, it was always there. It's just it had an effect, and it hits a couple of the themes that, you know, that resonate with me. But how can you not be concerned with technology? Even people that are completely like love the technology, they know that it's like frying their brains, you know.
I mean, it goes to that, like, what was it, 50s, 60s mentality of like, oh, it's gonna turn you into a zombie or whatever.
Yeah. But it has. it turned us all into zombies.
I would say Twitter and TikTok have gotten hold of me now. Yeah. The lessons learned in this film are, if the TV goes to static, don't listen to it, don't watch it. Maybe don't walk around with headphones on while you're like a post-apocalyptic shit's going on. And it doesn't hurt to have a tinfoil hat.
Yeah. Although, the headphones saved her for a while. And... Mm. And in the end, I mean, he puts them back on her. It's kind of a bittersweet ending, you know?
It was like an upside down moment, like from Stranger Things there, but yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Stranger Headphones. Things. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know about this. I lost track of Stranger Things. I think I only watched the first season.
I think Stranger Things lost track of itself because I have no idea if it's ever coming back, but yeah. Go on.
Well, yeah, that's one of those. Yeah, it goes on too long. They found another dead horse to beat, you know? Like, just end it. And this movie doesn't overstay its welcome. And by having three different directors, you know, with slightly different points of view, it sort of, like, renews itself as it goes, I think, you know?
I don't think I've ever seen a movie that's done it that way.
It's sort of like a... So, you know, when people publish, like, connected short story collections,
mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like that, you know, and a little bit like an anthology, like a, except, but they're all connected, though. Yeah, it definitely made me think of linked story collections, you know, mm-hmm. in books. I think that adds to it. I think it may have gotten... boring if it was just the straight storyline, you know?
Yes, it would have probably gotten really tedious.
Yeah, if we just followed Maya through the whole thing, you know what I mean? Which is kind of what it sets up her as the hero, you know? But
ironically, I found her to be the least interesting character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she, I mean, you know, look, this is a movie made by guys. She's the object of affection, you know, so she's sort of, she's a little bit impenetrable, you know, she's what they want, but they don't know what she is.
And they don't know who she is.
Right. All they do is imagine, you know, so in, it starts out, it sets it all up, you know, they get up out of bed and Ben tells her this fairy tale of their future. But it, and she's kind of charmed by it because she hates her husband and her marriage is over. But it's, that's a fucking fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lewis, her husband, has a whole different kind of a fantasy about her.
But we don't, happy couple and yeah.
Yeah, this, well, this kind of Stepford wife, traditional marriage. It's until death do us part. Like even like it's creep, like even where he's like hold, try to kiss her and like tells her I love you so much, and then like she's like I love you so much, and she's looking down. It's like you should be looking. You can look in my eyes when you say that, and so right there, then you know he's a fucking complete creep and psycho. You know,
I mean, you can tell he's clearly already paranoid and probably knows like the whole three-way thing is happening.
Yeah,
because like he was like smelling her and everything too.
And it's sort of, I think it's maybe implied that it's not the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Which makes you feel bad for Ben.
Ben's kind of a patsy. He's not, you know, he's running around trying to be the hero, but is she really worth being, like, saved? Maybe not. Maybe not. Yeah, we don't really know her, which is fine. I mean, for in the movie that works, you know what I mean? In real life, it would be different, but in for the
she's
story,
like the goal,
it works.
Basically.
Yeah.
By far, I found Lewis the most interesting person.
Yeah, I mean, he's fantastic. Well, and he would not die. They kept killing him, and he wouldn't die. He just kept getting back up because the signal possessed him so thoroughly that like he was the undead, just like you know. Our 24/7 news cycle, you know.
I find it funny how fast they're able to kind of catch on to the tech shit, where I would not have leapt to that conclusion so quickly.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think that back then maybe people were still cognizant. They were still they would be able to wake up every now and then from the trance they were under, and now people are much less apt to because they have the watch, they have the phone, they have the laptop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no escape now, where in 2007 maybe there still was.
There was
like the outside world actually felt a little bit more real than it does now to a lot of people. This is my hypothesis.
I like that. I like that you have your thing. Because you actually saw this when it came out. So.
Yes.
Or at least I imagine that's your origin story with this. You saw it probably like in theaters.
My origin story?
Yeah, I just totally coined that one. Horror/origin. There you go.
Nice. It's you got your own portmanteau, yeah. It's, yeah, horrigin. I don't know. That seems like some kind of like icky product that you like would smear on something. I don't know.
Or a really bad drink that they serve at a bar.
Right. Well, you could try. You can try trademarking it.
But I'm assuming you saw this in theaters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it in. I looked it up, so it was released early 2008. Yeah, I would have seen it in theaters for sure. I don't remember which theater, but yeah.
I mean, I feel like you almost would have had to hunt this down, or do you think, because I never would have found this film, and obviously it's not like it was heavily advertised. Is it just because you're already into indie movies?
Yeah. I mean, I've been into indie movies since the 80s. You know, it's what I always look for. I mean, I'm much more apt to miss like a big movie than a small movie, you know what I mean? Because I'm always looking at what's playing, like, you know, places like the Music Box or the Siskel or Doc Films or. But I think this played in multiplexes. Like somehow they must have gotten a deal to be at least in a couple of theaters. Yeah. I mean, horror movies are much more.
It got like $500,000.
It made $500,000?
Yeah.
That's a lot for its budget. Like, that would.
But to be saying that was in like multiplexes.
Yeah, but if it played at a couple of theaters, and you know what? It could have played in only the major cities.
Okay,
that's,
yeah.
That's probably how, and, you know. Horror movies are much more apt to make it to multiplexes than other genres, I find, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can find, like, often very shitty horror movies, you know, that'll make it because it's a genre that people flock to. Mm-hmm. The people that like horror movies will go, you know, to anything that's marketed as horror. You know what I mean?
And that's why we're a horror podcast. We know people are going to flock to us.
That's why we have millions of listeners. Yeah.
Can't let them down, ever.
That's right, and they need to know about this movie. Well, this is definitely like the prototypical, like, you know, like rough diamond or whatever, you know, like diamond in the rough kind of movie. It's something that slipped through the cracks. It should have been really shitty, this movie, you know what I mean? And it's a testament to these guys that it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the thought I kept having throughout the film, is this should have been bad. But it wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, like, the first 10 minutes, I was like, I do not want to watch this.
Oh, well, there's the kind of teaser thing before the credits that just looks like a rip. It's like a kind of Texas Chainsaw kind of thing or whatever. There's this like, killer within glasses chasing after, like, half-dressed young girls. But then you find out it's not the movie, you know?
Yeah. So, like, for, like, a good bit in the beginning, I was just like, do I have to watch this? Can I just look it up and tell Dimitri that I did watch it? I did
eventually
watch it.
When did it kick over? When did you start enjoying it?
When she got home and Lewis was basically interrogating her.
Mm.
That's when I was like, all right, I'm seeing some dynamics here. Because I didn't get any chemistry between her or, like, with Ben.
Well, I think it was just, like, an opportunity. It was, like, more of, like, for her, I think it was, like, a one-night stand. She wanted to get out of there. It was, like, a bad date thing. You know what I mean?
And he was planning their future.
Right. Which is, it's funny because that reminded me of, like, I also went to see, they made a movie of the cat person. Story. Mm-hmm. The movie's just okay, just like the story's just okay, but that's the setup of that. You know that story, Cat Person.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like that writer got like $1 billion advance because that story was a hit in the New Yorker for some reason. I don't know why it was such a big deal, that story, but that's the, you know, it's like this bad hookup, you know, that it means completely different things to the two people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the setup of this movie too.
See, at first I thought you were going to say that you were that person, but yeah. Okay. That fits more.
Which, the old guy?
That you're that person who, like, just didn't know that the relationship was not a real relationship.
No, I did have a situation where, you know, a woman ghosted on me completely, but she called herself my girlfriend the night before she disappeared. That's the confusing part, you know?
That's just weird, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the, every signal that she sent was the opposite, you know what I mean? I think I'm not as clueless as to not feel like when somebody doesn't want to be around me, I think I can tell. And that was not the situation, you know?
Whereas Ben just didn't understand. And Lewis didn't understand either. They did not understand that Maya does not give a fuck about either of them.
No. And we don't know what Maya wants because we don't know Maya. She's just, as you said before, she's the goal. Yeah.
All I can imagine is that she just wants to escape and she's willing to take any avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, where she was just like, all right, apartment's not safe, go with the other guy. That was a good plan B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's just trying to survive, which is what you do in a zombie apocalypse or whatever this could be called. They're not real zombies, but...
But, like, when she was, like, saying she was going to the train station, it's not like she's, like, almost like, I desperately have to meet him. It was more like, I'm going to go here now.
No, I'm going to use you to get to survive kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not that she's suddenly in love with Ben. And even back to the beginning where he tells her that his fairy tale, how they sail off into the sunset, you can tell she's charmed by it, but she doesn't actually believe it. You know what I mean?
We all like to imagine that someone like is that crazy in love with us, but
yeah. But that's what
you're just like that. That is never going to happen. But thank you.
Yeah, I think that's maybe all that stuff, the mismatches, and is what makes this movie work. Is the love triangle feels real.
Mm-hmm.
That's why how they can get around having a low budget, you know, and very limited means. I mean, in a big budget version of this, there would be giant crowd scenes of like the apocalypse and stuff, and here they couldn't do that. Well, it would be The Walking Dead. It would be a million other. You've seen this a million times, you know.
Prior to watching it, I had watched Day of the Dead.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that was fucking terrible.
Which, the original or the?
See, the fact that I didn't know that there's an original makes me sad.
You've never seen the original Day of the Dead?
No, I've seen so many zombie movies, but no, that one I did not catch.
The original Day of the Dead is pretty good. It's a George Romero. It's the third in the trilogy.
Okay.
Yeah. There's Night of the Living Dead. Dawn is the, we covered. That's the one in the shopping mall. And then there's Day of the Dead. And then he comes back many years later with Land of the Dead and then Diary of the Dead, you know, which is like a video one, you know, like.
As long as it has dead at the end.
Yeah. Well, he's the king. He's the king of that. But the, yeah, this is not, yeah. I
imagine them being like just a lot of violence happening within the streets and maybe people trying to like coordinate and everything. And that would have sucked.
Yeah, this movie is totally concerned on these characters, focused on these characters, the characters in the movie. It's not focused on, like, gory kills or, like, whatever, like, this kind of sadistic shit that, like, a certain kind of horror fan revels in, you know? Like, the many different ways you can kill a person. I mean, it's just that even Rod, who's gone insane and doesn't know it, is protecting himself. You know, he's trying to survive. That's all.
He is a testament to when in need, use duct tape.
it's the miracle. It's the one of the seven wonders of the world.
You know, duct tape is pretty miraculous. So
yeah. Holds the world together. Yeah.
You know, if you're ever in a near-death situation with someone who's turned into a zombie, strap them down.
Yeah. This movie also has, like, an unusual sense of humor for this kind of... I mean, there is humor in slasher movies, but it's not the kind that this has. This is a lot darker.
Slasher movies tend to have very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Humor, and this, as I was saying before, where I was like, oh, this is kind of like a psychological like thriller mixed with like dark comedy.
This is sardonic. It's pitch black, the humor. I mean, I'd like the one scene where Rod is just ahead, you know, and then they give him a cigarette and he reveals like where Maya's gone, and then in the next scene, you know, it was a hallucination. It was the guy was hallucinating because he's like, you know, you're talking to a dead head, right? And yeah, it keeps flashing.
I did like that science experiment though.
Yeah. Oh, when they jolt him back to life with a car battery.
It's like, this is certainly going to get us the answers we need.
Yeah. It keeps, there's many kind of, dream sequences or fantasies, like down to, you know, the saddest one at the, right before the ending when Ben sees them, like, you know, having sex in some kind of, like, wardrobe closet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he thinks in his fantasy she's recovered and she's, like, in love with him and they're going to run off and have a beautiful future. But then a second later, he sees her glassy eyes and he just puts her headphones back on, you know? So she can listen to that weird cover of the Joy Division song that keeps playing.
Mm-hmm.
I also looked up the guy that did the soundtrack is like from Mumford and Sons.
Is it really?
Yeah. And the original song, the song they were wanted to have was a cover of Perfect Day by Lou Reed, but they couldn't get the rights, which that would have been great.
That would have been better, yeah.
I mean, but Atmosphere works. It's a good Joy Division song.
Like, they're both similar messages, vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, right. It's a better written movie than most slashers are. I think that's a lot of it. And
a lot of movies, like, if it's not a slasher movie, it's usually much better than the way a slasher movie is written. It's very hard to write a good slasher movie.
Yeah. Yeah, because people fall in love with these, like, the violence and the effects and stuff, mm-hmm. and trying to shock people.
Where this was definitely heavily within the mind and just stuck in small spaces. I like that they're always in small spaces. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah, but well, because you feel how the claustrophobia of it, you know?
Yeah, like I just felt like they're feeling more and more trapped and the world was like closing in on them.
Yeah, it really, weirdly, it did give you the feeling of what the situation might be like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it had that kind of grubby... It had a bit of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of feel, you know, where it looks kind of like half like a documentary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just trying to like outrun the thing that's chasing them,
which is, you know, quite ironically just everywhere.
Yeah,
like there is nothing to run from, which is
that's the thing is
conclusion. There's nowhere you can go.
Yeah, it's dark all the way down because even if they get to the train or whatever, the plane, whatever that, the Terminal 13, where are they going to go where there are no screens? Even in 2007, there's screens everywhere.
Or radios with static and shit like that.
Yeah, there's a signal everywhere. There's no running away from the technology. We're fucked, 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 fucked.
Can't leave the apartment. Too many, like, fucked up people there. Landlord guy was definitely trying to get to Maya and be like, no, 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 it's not safe out there. Shit like that.
That was another great scene where they're driving to the terminal, and that, like, when he puts his tinfoil hat on and he's trying to explain scientifically what's happening with the signal, and then Ben is like, what the fuck are you even talking about? I don't understand. Because he's talking so fast, because he's Mr. Science Nerd, you know?
I found that part heavily relatable with, did you watch Sandra Bullock's movie Bird Box?
No, I didn't see Bird Box. What was the thing in Bird Box?
You know, they all end up in one person's house because, you know, they're trying to escape the thing that they can't look at. And no one really is quite sure what's going on. They're trying to figure it out. But the only person who understands, like, all the scientific explanations and is able to, like, make the leap and, okay, this is how we're going to survive was a grocery store clerk.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, it would be a random-ass person, wouldn't it? Like... It would be the most unlikely, like, you're the one who knows what's going on. Like,
mm-hmm. Well, the other thing I appreciated in this movie is, like, unlike so many of these kinds of movies, like, the hero or the person that understands what's going on kind of change, the power dynamics change all the time. Like, sometimes Lewis is in control some of the time, but then he loses control.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben gets the upper hand, and then I forget what is the landlord's name? I forget his name now.
I think it's Clark, isn't it?
Clark, yes, it's Clark. Because
there's the horny guy made that joke
of
Lewis Clark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Clark. And then I think he asked like something about like Sacagawea or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That guy was just totally comedy relief.
He really was. That's what I really loved about him.
Yeah, he was just there to get laid. You know, he was like wandered in from like an American Pie movie or something. You know,
like, the things that came out of his mouth, I was just like, Holy hell.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope the signal got to you, and that's why you're being so open.
No, but the thing, the other fun part about it is, like, there's many, many instances where you don't know if they're possessed with the signal or not. It gets into a gray area. It's like, were they this way or not? And
that's what I liked about Lewis, is that you couldn't quite tell, like, is he just a really bitter, fucked up husband? Or,
yeah,
like, is he always this way? Or is the signal just really amplified it? Just,
well, in many ways, all of them at times, Ben too, because Ben keeps having these visions and stuff. So is that his, as they, somebody says early on, or maybe even Clark says, whoever it affects, the signal affects everybody differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that none of them are immune from the signal. They're all under the spell of the signal one way or another. And they have these lucid moments, but then they go back into their delusions. That's kind of the point, I think.
Yeah, I definitely got that. I was trying to figure out, like, if the delusions were always just to be, like, as violent as possible, or if they triggered, like, your most, like, dominant, like, feeling that you walk around with.
Yeah. I think sometimes it encouraged that. Well, you can make an argument, actually, that the whole thing kicking up, Ben telling Maya that they're going to run away together is a delusion he got from the TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why, because, like, it's the same fine with, thing with, like, Lewis, where he's like, I have the picture perfect wife. Everything's good. Everything's fine.
Yeah. It's the TV that told them to have,
I'm the husband who has to go save her. This is my job.
These dumb ideas come from media. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That otherwise,
and
if they didn't
guy
have the,
maybe just watched American Pie.
Yeah. But at the same time, all these ideas are things that we fed into the signal to begin with. Mm-hmm. Like the signal, you know, there's no, this is not a Stephen King story, so there's no alien explanation, you know. We made the fucking signal, so
that's what I like most about it. Yeah.
it's very grounded in terrestrial reality, in our reality.
And I just like the ambiguity of it all, like from the beginning to the end. I mean, just in the beginning, it was just like, why did this suddenly happen? And then at the end of being like, so how did it resolve? How did it end up?
Yeah, it's ambiguous, but not vague, you know, like the good kind of ambiguous, because,
like, it's not the end where I was just like, oh, no, I want to hear more. It's one of those, I dig that, yeah.
Yeah.
And for a large amount of time, I didn't really give a fuck where the signal came from.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, it's coming from inside the house, as it always does. You know, it's always coming from inside the house. You know, we have met the enemy, and it is us.
Like, it wasn't one of those movies that had, like, oh, no, Russia figured out a way to turn our media against us or something.
Yeah.
It was just one of those, oh, damn, it's happening.
Yeah, there's no scapegoat. You know, it's all about the relationships between these people and the culture that they live in,
mm-hmm.
which they're part of and they can't escape. So, yeah, whatever. There's no plane or train that'll get them out of this.
Yeah.
Because it's their world.
And our world would be so much worse.
Yeah.
Like, well, there is no escaping anywhere.
Right. Yeah, they would. Actually, yeah, to connect this to the stupid David Fincher movie. In the David Fincher movie, it's Michael Fassbender plays, like, the world's greatest contract killer. And one of the things he does is he orders, like, a door fob from copier thing from Amazon, and then he picks it up in one of those Amazon locker things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this new technology in the killer, and that's what, yeah, like the new version of this would be full of all this fucking shit you can order off your screen.
And all the smart devices you have around the house. And
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Yeah, smart. This phone, this movie does have phones, but they're much less in play than they are.
They're not like smartphones yet.
Right. Exactly. Although, yeah, let's see. In
like, I think the iPhone came out in like 2007. Actually, let's take a look at that.
Yeah, those. Yeah, like about in Android would be about the same time, right?
Yeah, it was like a direct response.
Yeah, around that. Yeah, I had. I was trying to think now. Yeah, in the when this movie came out.
Yeah, directly 2007. So yeah.
Oh, 2000. Oh, okay. No. In 2007, I would have had a smartphone. By then, yeah, I would have had something like a Razor or something. I don't know, like some kind of Motorola thing, you know.
I didn't get a smartphone until I was in college.
Right. Well, I didn't get a smartphone until I was like 35. So.
That's true. And Gen Z, they don't understand even like. What my technology was is pretty archaic in their mind. If you say, like, oh, if we wanted to text, it was, like, T9, and they'd be like, what the fuck is that? And it's like, oh,
you just That's what I do. I do T9 now.
Yeah, like, that's basically...
That's
like
what's on my phone. What?
Yeah, yeah, that's what we had to do. And if you tell them that, they'd be like, pray tell. Like,
although my T9, this T9 on my current phone is much more advanced than what we had. Because there's all this, it's got a huge, vocabulary predictive thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many, many words that it can do, you know?
I like that.
And it learns the words that I use. So it suggests them first.
I taught my iPhone. Yeah. Fuck. It knows fuck.
Yeah, right. Yeah, mine definitely, yeah, my phone definitely knows how to fuck. Yeah, I have a dumb phone, but it's a lot smarter than the old T9 system.
Now I'm just like going back nostalgically to my old cell phone. So let's go back to the Signal.
That's fine. No, the point in this movie is not the kind of technology; it's just any kind of technology, and that's why this premise could work in any age. You know, mm-hmm. you could do this in the days of transistor radios. You know, like you could do this before TVs, even. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like some kind of, you could have a fucking a foghorn or something. You know, like do this, put people under its spell, like just a sound. It's pretty ingenious. It's such a basic thing. And I think that's one of the reasons, I guess, it came into my head was that, you know, the movie we did before was The Fog. So, like, that rather than a monster, it was some kind of entity or, like, a, if not a natural, something ambient, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The enemy or the monster is like some kind of ambient thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, in turn, of course, makes it like we're really the monster. You know, you can blame it on whatever sound or image you want.
Almost in a Terminator kind of way of we're being destroyed by the thing we made.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes Frankenstein so affecting, you know?
Oh, I guess bring it like Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
I have become death.
Right.
That was the most awkward scenes I've ever seen in my life. But
I didn't even get that far. I didn't make it to the 10-minute sex scene or like whatever
people like talked about. Quoting in Sanskrit. Yeah, okay.
That movie is fucking bullshit.
If you got to that scene, even you would be like, why am I still watching this?
Well, I tried it twice. Lasted half an hour the first time. I forced myself to sit through an hour the second time and just fucking ran away. Could not. The second time, that was like that. Remember that day was like over 100?
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was over 100 outside, and I preferred to bike home rather than sit through the rest of that fucking atrocity.
I was so let down by that movie, which shows that budget does nothing.
That's what I'm saying. It's like that movie was made, had more money than fucking Pharaoh, you know, like to make that movie.
Mm-hmm.
For on what they spent it on, I don't know. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't on a screenplay or characters. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It made me angry, that movie.
I think it angered a lot of people because, I mean, seriously, going in, you heard everyone very hyped. Going out, no one really said anything.
No, but it was a big, it was, people went to see it. It was a big hit. I mean, it wasn't nearly as big as Barbie, but, you know.
Well, it's because Barbie, you could have people who are under the age of 17 going to it.
I guess so. I there's probably like a generation of like little nerd boys that'll like grow up loving Oppenheimer, you know?
That'll be odd, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad because I love Cillian Murphy. He's such a great actor.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a good movie for kids that want to grow up to be evil geniuses, you know? If you want to grow up to be like a supervillain.
Yeah. There are definitely some of them who would probably like to do it, but
yeah, that's
these
what
days
I mean.
They couldn't be because they have too much technology around them. Seriously, I actually...
Because they have the signal, like, putting them in a trance.
They don't know how to actually... They only know how to operate the technology. They don't actually know how to, like, do the go-arounds, and they don't know how to fix it.
Oh, really?
Yes, because they were just born with it, so they never had to learn how to do, like, patches or HTML or, you know what I mean.
That's the thing I'm thankful for. Well, I mean, my exposure to the internet and websites was through my ex-wife, who was a database programmer, and she started my website, so I know very basic HTML. I only know HTML to put together my website. That's how much HTML I know. So I know how to copy and paste pages and put images and hotspots in, you know?
Like, they're not great at that. That's why they have stuff like Squarespace and everything. It's just one of those, and here's your template, just fill in.
That's the funny thing is, it's like, if you're like somebody like me who's done it their own way all these years, like those, I've tried to use those sites like Squarespace, and they're so frustrating to me.
They're so not constrained.
Yeah, because they're not customizable to the level that I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
They're like one size fits all, you know.
Definitely.
They're annoying to me. I did have to learn. Well, more recently, I had to learn some WordPress stuff because all the I figured out how to add like my newsletter and my podcast now live on the same server as my regular art website.
Mm-hmm.
And they just live on there through like WordPress add-ons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But all the files and everything are on the same server, which is nice, you know, because I have access to all of it. And I'm not paying somebody extra. You know what I mean?
I would never do that. So yeah. Pay someone extra to, yeah, I know.
No, but
all my shit.
No, but like before that, you know, I tried many different things, like having blogs, having newsletters, like using like Substack or Tiny Letter or Ghost, like, and all these other companies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you go, they're separate sites, and I always wanted. It took me forever and ever to figure out how to have it all under one on one website, and. No, I have.
I feel like I'm
take so much work.
I'm going to be on your side here. I tried Substack. I really just was like, I don't understand the point of this. I have my own website. Like, I don't know.
Well, the point of Substack is to gain. It's sort of like it's hybrid. You know, you gain paying customer. It's for people to pay.
I mean, it's like what? Like Patreon plus Medium plus Tiny Letter, I guess.
Yeah, it's all mixed together, yeah.
But, yeah, I just found it very awkward to use. I didn't like the way that it was formatted, and if I ever do a newsletter, it'd probably be through Tiny Letter again, if anyone still pays attention to that. I don't like newsletters. I just never feel like I have anything to say.
Well, yeah, I like them.
But you're someone who has something to say.
I guess so. But also,
like, I've read your letters and everything. Like, you have some pretty good thoughts where I'm just like, I don't really have that much going on.
Well, one of the reasons I have that is that I've stored up, like, you know, it comes out once a week. And I'm not using Twitter or Instagram or TikTok. I haven't wasted all my energy on these to make, you know, free entertainment and like art for these other corporations, you know, the way most people have.
I mean, what I've seen on Substack and everything, like, it is like when they do their, like, what do you call it, newsletter blog things, they all have like purposes. And I'm just too much of a random thinker. And that is exactly basically what you said, is that I just put my thoughts on Twitter.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, if you weren't on Twitter or any of the other ones, like during a week, you'd probably come up with enough things.
Probably. Like if I was just like taking notes, like journaling and everything, and then be like, all right, I'm going to throw
Yeah. But because I've been writing this newsletter for a decade now. I've trained myself to do that. You know, even before I got off Twitter, I had started the newsletter before I got off Twitter, but it really took over in 2015 when I quit all the social media.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's my soapbox for the week, you know, whereas most people have the soapbox in their fingertips at all times. So any random thought you have, you can put in there. And then the newsletter is sort of a way to, like, you know, sit on something and think about it before you just spout it out. It's a different way of acting or thinking.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I think you have to have the confidence to, like, feel like people want to actually hear your thoughts.
Oh, I have no, I mean, I don't even know. I don't know how many, I know how many subscribers I have. I don't know how many, I've disabled all these, like the
comments,
stats,
or whatever,
the stats thing where it tells you, no, but all these, any of these,
oh,
newsletter,
like, you don't
sites,
know, like, what your demographic is.
I don't want to know how many people opened it, how many got it, how many put it in. Like, you can track, because the newsletter has cookies, you know, they have trackers in them, so they can send back information to you.
Mm-hmm.
They all do. All of them do, but I've disabled all the notifications. Mm-hmm. So all I know is when somebody signs up for the newsletter.
That's interesting.
I almost wish I didn't know that.
You just want to, like, send your thoughts out. You don't want to know who's getting
yes.
it.
Yes. Absolutely not. And I get, you know, I get comments, I get feedback every now and then, not very much. But it's also, I mean, to me, like, so much of the internet as I use it is it's a rough draft for creative projects, for writing and for art.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the finished thing. The finished thing is in out in the world. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Whether in pictures or in books. To me, the internet will always just be a rough draft, a sketchbook, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's what it's good for, because it's not, it can't keep your attention the way a book or a painting or a movie can, because you have access to so many other things. It's so, the distractions are so built in.
Mm-hmm.
So I will never think of it, I don't think, as like an end in itself. But yeah, I've plundered my newsletter over and over again for writing and other ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it reminds
like
you of stuff.
Yeah. It's like a day book or whatever, like, you know.
I mean, you said yourself, like,
book.
You always write what you know.
Yeah.
So.
For sure. Yeah. You know what? Oh, this one made me think of, aside from Lewis, we don't really know the jobs of any, well, Maya's a waitress, or she works in a restaurant, I guess.
Yeah, we know that, and we know one dude's a landlord.
Yeah, and we don't know what Ben does, do we?
We don't know what Ben does. Let's assume the Stepford wife is a housewife.
Yeah, her job is just to throw dinner parties.
We don't know what Rob does. and we have no idea about.
Yeah, those the guys in the in Lewis's apartment. We don't, they're just pals. They're just trying to use his TV and eating his food.
Either they're just like, you know, bros from back in the day. Maybe he works with them. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. It's a great scene too. Like when she first walks in, and you can't tell what's because it just looks like a frat house or something.
And she just kind of like scoffs in a way of like, fucking guys just destroying my house.
I know. But it doesn't feel like her house. It feels like it's just this frat house or something.
Yeah, like that she happens to live in. She happens to live in, yeah.
Yeah, which is a great way to illustrate the state of their marriage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How bad it is, how bad it's gotten. That he'd rather hang out with the bros than be with her.
Yet but, he still thinks he's an amazing husband.
Well, because his like ego won't, and the cultural programming won't let him let go of that.
Although I guess we could probably argue he is probably a better husband than she is wife.
Maybe, but, you know, it's...
Like, they're both, like, saying is seriously fucked up in their dynamic, but he at all times, like, he was looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always killing because he's, like... protecting her, even though she
that's what the signal it. Fed him, like the programmed him to need
basically.
It's like, yeah, I mean, it starts that it's a I mean, there's so many fun good scenes in this when you first know that it's affected him, when the friend is swinging the bat and it's nowhere, and it's like, you're swinging this right at my wife, and she's across the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know he's having a delusion.
But like not total full on yet.
You try to kill my, fuck my wife. You know, like he's conflating the words and stuff, you know.
I love that. Like, you know, then it's on his mind. Like, he knows she fucks around.
You know that from the first time their interaction, that he's looking at her suspiciously.
That's why he's smelling her and everything. Mm-hmm. And he was just which like, means maybe go wash off some of that perfume.
Which means she's done it before. You know what I mean? That's the implication.
It takes a certain delusional kind of guy to stick around, think that they're in a great marriage, even though he knows his wife is fucking around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what trips it all off is infidelity, but is she just... Well, you know, her mistake is staying with him, you know, and... searching for love elsewhere when she could just be single.
Yeah, I really do think that she was the kind of person who didn't... She just got married because that's a societal thing. She didn't seem like she was interested in being, like, in a monogamous relationship at all. She was out there for herself at all times.
Yeah, it starts with... I mean, she wakes up and she's sort of one of those prototypical, like, where the hell am I kind of things. Like, oh, no.
You could almost see, like,
where did I wake up?
You know, tense up moment when Ben is cuddling her.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, oh, like he's being intimate, and she's like, I did not sign up for this kind of vibe.
That's right. I was just here for the fucking.
Like, she's freaking out about the time. He's just like, what's wrong with the time? And
yeah, yeah. He wants to have a romantic day afterwards.
Yeah.
To plan their future. Like, this is how I got in trouble the first time. This is what I'm, and I keep repeating these patterns.
Well, that is an unhappy person. She doesn't know who she is, clearly.
Right. Yeah, even though, yeah, we may not find out who she is, her actions are very, very familiar.
Yes.
we all know these actions that she's doing, you know. We've either been them or had them done to us, you know.
I vibe that.
That's what keeps this movie grounded and sort of like watchable, is like all the, I don't think anybody in this movie really does anything that's not real, you know what I mean, except under the circumstances, the
head decapitating and trying to wire it. That one was the most odd moment, I guess.
Yeah, but that's they tell you in the next scene that it's a delusion. You know, it's a...
Yeah.
It's a...
You realize you're talking to
a hallucination, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything you know, not real is a hallucination in this movie, pretty much, you know. And but yeah, they these characters flip back and forth from their delusions to the reality until they're confused.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know that they can trust each other. They can't tell who they meet is under the spell of the signal and who isn't, because really they're all under the spell of it.
I mean, I think that's probably why I love the line, "Do you have the crazy?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's a little bit like that thing in the Blade Runner where, you know, when the guy, the Rutger Hauer character realizes he's, you know, he knows he's a robot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sad about it, you know, like.
Which is, you know, the fun thing is the people who have the crazy don't know they have the crazy.
Sure. Well, yeah. Ignorance is bliss, as it's been famously said. Yeah.
Yeah. I think all in all, good movie pick. I liked it.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad. I'm glad.
And it was surprisingly easy to find. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good when the little movies don't disappear, you know, that they can have a, they can be rediscovered this way. Yeah, there's a couple of things I've been looking for. It's surprising the things that are not available still. It's weird for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, my next pick that I wanted to do for our next episode, Little Otik, I can't find anywhere.
Oh, really? It's not available? Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I've been like searching all over the internet and I'm like, am I going to have to illegally download this?
Where did I saw it? I saw it on some streaming service.
I saw it on Netflix a ways back, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, those are... Yeah, they're often like temporary, whatever, agreements, and then it falls off. That's a shame. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if you'll have to... Unless you find it, we have to have a second choice.
I do have a second choice, actually.
What's your second choice?
I don't know how into it you'll be, but it's a lot like...
That sucks. No.
You don't want to do Who Invited Them?
Is Who Invited Them... What is that?
It has a lot of vibes that The Invite has, and it was directed by our dear pal, Duncan Birmingham.
Oh, yeah, that movie. Yeah. Do you have another choice?
The other one is I Feel So Bad That I Actually Just Only Watched It When I Was, like, Flying to Egypt. Cape Fear.
I hope the original or the remake?
The Scorsese one.
Original's much better.
Okay. I'll just go down my list then. Dimitri is very picky.
I am picky. Well, yeah, that's what I love Scorsese. That I don't love that movie.
Really? Yeah. I was shocked that I liked it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably one of my least favorite Scorsese movies. So actually my least favorite Scorsese movie is Shutter Island. That's the worst one he ever made, I think. But like that's when he's like trying to make a Tarantino movie or something. But the new Scorsese movie is amazing.
Well,
it's so good. But it's not a horror movie. It's a real life horror, but like
there is the option of if you would like to stick with zombies 28 days later.
Oh. I'd rewatch that again.
Yeah, okay.
It's the dawn of the fast zombie. I remember there's a debate whether those are zombies or not, and I guess they're technically not zombies, but
yeah, yeah, I mean they call it like the what, rage virus or something.
Yeah, Danny Boyle directed that.
Okay.
Who made Trainspotting, connecting to our conversation yesterday on the other podcast.
So yeah, 28 days later.
Is that okay with you? Yeah, I'm sorry about being picky, but like. I just know those two other choices. I don't think I can budge from like what I think of them.
I do have to ask though, what is it about the new Cape Fear? I say new. I'd never seen that before.
Watch
the
old
original. Is there some big difference?
Yeah, a lot less backstory. It's over. It's like this. It's this thing. It's like overstuffed Twinkie thing. It's the gourmet Twinkie thing.
I'm saying it's like from the 60s. Yes.
With Robert Mitchum is who also appears in the new New York Cape Fear is the bad guy.
Okay.
Yeah, is it Gregory Peck?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Yes, Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck is the father, and Robert Mitchum is what's his Max Cady, I think, is the guy, the escaped guy, the guy that's terrorizing them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just overkill. I think he crosses over into schlock, like with. What De Niro does in that movie, like, and I love Robert De Niro, but like he just hams it up.
I just loved his accent in that. Like I was there for that, and I really liked Juliette Lewis.
I like Juliette Lewis, yeah, but yeah, I
and Jessica Lange, like the cast going on.
Oh, for sure. I just found it unnecessary. I think I'd seen the original Cape Fear before.
See, I didn't even know there was an original. I wasn't aware of this one, so yeah.
Yeah.
There's just nothing to watch on that plane, Dimitri.
Yeah. I think it was actually it's a lot of what, like, most of Tarantino's career has been, is making overstuffed remakes, basically, or riffs, and, like, putting more stuff in. Or like actually, Fincher is a good when David Fincher remade The Girl with the Jade Dragon Tattoo, which is completely unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
No need, like zero, you know. But made it for a lot more money and made it a lot longer. Or like when they made that horrible Where the Wild Things Are movie.
Oh yeah, I was told that I should watch that, but I don't want to watch that.
Oof. Well, with a screenplay by David Eggers, full of like all this like psychobabble, like Freudian backstory, and that's some of what Cape Fear does. It adds all this kind of backstory that the original didn't have.
Interesting.
It sexualizes the girl a lot more than the original does. Well, because they have Juliette Lewis in, you know, because that's her stock in trade, you know.
I would say that's what she does best, yeah.
Right, she's, yeah, grew up playing jailbait, basically. Yeah.
Hey, when you find your role, you stick with that role.
Yeah, watch the original. It's just...
I'll
it's a lot more
kind, it, yeah.
Kind of lean and mean. It's more like a noir, you know.
Yeah, I got the vibe that in the one I watched that it was, well, one, it was so different than any other Scorsese film I'd seen, and it had noir vibes.
It was a genre exercise, you know. Every now and then he would do that, rather than doing his regular thing, he would try a genre, you know. So like Shutter Island is his horror movie, you know.
Since we aren't talking about it, I'll just say I fucking loved Robert De Niro's voice. Like that was the part that made me be like, oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, see, I was completely baffled. I didn't know what the fuck he was doing.
That's what like threw me. I was like, what the hell kind of accent is he trying to pull here?
Yeah. I guess I could. It was one of those movies where I couldn't ever not see them as like, this is a bunch of actors pretending to do a thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, at all times, I always was aware of the fact
that you were watching Robert De Niro, he also like worked out. And he was all ripped and stuff. He was all like muscly.
And I just was like, oh my God, that's Jessica Lange before American Horror Story.
It's hilarious to me that you know her from.
I know she's American in like Horse. One of the King Kongs and everything.
She's in a million movies. I mean, she was a big star, you know. She used to be.
I'm catching up on her shit, but she's amazing in American Horror Story. I know it's not your vibe, but she really rocked that shit. Like, I do promise that, like, if she wasn't in it, I probably would probably not have, like, ever watched it. She made it worth watching.
It's what a sad fate. Like, all these amazing actors and actresses, like, they all show up in these fucking Marvel movies now because I just see the trailers. Like, fucking Helen Mirren, like real actors are in these movies. It's insane.
Which movie is she in?
She's in one of the superhero movies. A couple of them, at least.
Yeah, some people need to know when to say no.
Yeah, I mean, how many fucking summer houses do you need? You know, like...
Yeah, just as we discussed with Tom Hanks, it's like you've not made a decent movie in maybe a decade, now probably more like 2 decades. Like, just stop. You don't need to keep going.
Yeah, the idea, like, was always, it's been for decades now, you know, like why do the Rolling Stones keep touring and putting out records? They just don't know how to do anything else, you know. They just keep going. But like,
that's why I have great respect for like the actors, writers, directors who are just like, and now I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's tons of, like, Bridget Fonda retired, you know, like she was in movies for a while, she did pretty well, but she hasn't been in a movie in like 20 years, you know.
Last night I was watching Ghostbusters and I was just like, I have utmost respect for Rick Moranis for stepping out eventually and being like, I'm going to do my own life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't he come back? Like, sort of.
I think he had like a mini comeback, but I don't think he's really doing anything where he was just like, okay, maybe I'll experiment again.
But yeah, there's a lot of them that do. Annette Bening left to raise kids, you know, and then
that's what Rick Moranis did too.
Now she's back. Yeah. Yeah.
Some of them make terrible comebacks though. I just recently watched a Jodie Foster movie. I forget what it was. I didn't last like more than like 20 minutes in it, but I was like, this is the movie she chose to come back for. Like,
did Jodie Foster go away?
She'd been gone for a while. Yeah.
Well, she's also directed movies. I mean, she's directed several movies.
That is true. I mean, I think she obviously took time out to be just more behind the camera or just do her own thing.
She's in the movie with Annette Bening that is coming out.
And so I'm saying, like, she's starting to come back in. She's trickling back into Hollywood again.
You're right. What movie did you not like her in? Do you remember?
You know, that's one of those things. I'm going to look it up right now because I was just like... Why did she do this? Jodie Foster, Googling you now.
Her ears are burning, I'm sure.
I know. Okay, bitch, where is your filmography here? Oh, Hotel Artemis.
I don't know what that is.
It was
is that a recent movie?
Well, I'd call it recent because it's 2018, but...
Yeah, yeah, it's... You know, it's not 2007.
The synopsis is, as rioting rocks L.A. in the year 2028, disgruntled thieves make their way to Hotel Artemis, a 13-story...
Oh, it's a futuristic movie. Okay.
Yeah. Members-only hospital for criminals. And it's operated by Jodie Foster.
That must have gone straight to video. Like, I've never heard of that movie.
I'd never heard of it either, but it kept popping up on my Netflix thing, and I was just like, we'll see. And, like, I couldn't go, as I said, more than, like, maybe 10, 15 minutes.
But she's always been very select. She makes odd choices, but unusual ones oftentimes, you know.
That's what I was saying, like, you know, a lot of times when she comes into a movie, I'm just like, oh, she definitely thought this was good, and she really did a good role here, but this one, I was just like, but why? Maybe she did better in it if it stayed around more, but
she's a very good actress. You know, she's Jodie Foster. But yeah, she's in stuff like, for a while she was doing these like action movies like Panic Room, you know, like stuff like that. I was like, come on. I don't know.
I think it's interesting. Panic Room, originally she wasn't supposed to be in it. That ended up just working. Kristen Stewart was always going to be in it.
Oh, really?
Was going to be Nicole Kidman as the mother. And instead, it was Jodie Foster because Nicole Kidman dropped out. And who better fit for a mother for Kristen Stewart would probably be Jodie Foster. I think they fit better. Yeah. They looked more alike in it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Where if you put Nicole Kidman as that mother, I just wouldn't have been like, that's your child. I'd be like, that's someone else's baby. That's not your baby.
Yeah. But,
okay, so 28 days later?
Yeah. Yeah, with what's
the
his name?
Zombies.
Yeah, who's, is that Ewan McGregor? Is Ewan McGregor in 28 Days Later or no?
No, it's not Ewan McGregor.
It's one of those
Cillian
guys.
Murphy.
Cillian Murphy is in it, right.
Hey, yeah, one of those. He'll redeem himself for us.
By going into the past?
Yeah. We'll see. We'll remember that he was good in something.
Oh, he's good in
lots of stuff. He's a great actor. So, yeah.
I think he's usually better as a supporting actor.
Yeah. He usually is. Yeah, you were definitely right.
Usually he is. I like that one where he's the killer on the plane.
Do you know? Red Eye. You know
what, yeah, that.
I like
it's
that
a
one.
It's a trashy movie, but kind of entertaining. He's a good bad guy in the Batman movies.
Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely is very good. He's good at being more sinister.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his vibe. So having him be Oppenheimer was weird.
Yeah.
Odd
choice. He was a monster. A real life monster.
Yeah, but you can't have someone with so good of acting skills play that kind of monster, I feel.
I guess lots of people are praising him. They think he's gonna win a bunch of awards and stuff. Those awards are for lifetime achievement, like with Scorsese, when they gave him the Oscar for I always forget the name of that movie. Another one of the worst movies of his career. With DiCaprio and Marky Mark.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a remake of a Hong Kong movie.
Wait, are you talking about The Departed?
Yes, The Departed, yes.
Yeah.
It's a remake of Infernal Affairs, which is a really interesting.
I think we've all seen those kind of quote-unquote lifetime achievement awards. Will Smith, I don't even understand why he got that Oscar, because I don't think he ever did any amazing jobs in anything he did.
You're throwing shade at the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
It's one of those things where, at all times, you're like, there's Will Smith being Will Smith.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan. Aside from, I think that's The Slap is the most authentic role he's ever had in his life. It's where he finally played himself.
Yeah, the best role he ever did was pretending that he was a normal dude.
Well, he's just a type A bully,
He's the alpha type.
Yeah. Type A. but now his whatever his stage wife gets to cash in with her memoir.
If I thought the Britney Spears one was juicy, I think Jada Pinkett Smith's is gonna be juicy.
Are you gonna read that too?
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where it's already been leaked so much where how much more is there to be said?
I don't know.
I just like that they keep calling Jada Pinkett Smith star of Scream 2. And it's she died in the first 10 minutes.
But Drew Barrymore is the star of Scream 1, right?
I feel like...
She died in 3 minutes or whatever.
But that's the fun thing is that they don't refer to her as that at all.
No.
They just say Drew Barrymore. Whereas Jada Pinkett Smith, they always feel like they have to add something to it to be she was in this.
Well, because Jada Pinkett Smith hasn't had, a half of the career that, Drew Barrymore has been a star since she was a baby.
Yeah.
Literally. She was in Firestarter. She was five or something. And she was in
I think she was younger in E.T.
In E.T., she was even younger, yeah. Yeah, she was like four or something. I don't know. And she comes from a family of actors, you know, so.
Yeah, they go way back.
Yep, yeah, many generations. The Barrymores, yeah.
And that's why I understand that people get really pissed off at her about, like, how she broke the strike and everything. But all I keep thinking is, this is a woman who is not grounded in reality at all. She was never raised that way.
She walked it back.
She did walk it back. Yeah.
She realized she made a mistake. Yeah. I've never seen her show. Have you ever seen her show?
I think I saw her interview Courtney Cox.
How's that? How she is an interviewer?
I think like they're talking about Scream.
Yeah. Hey, remember that time we were both in Scream?
Like she seemed like she's just one of those like, I'm an actor, I'm going to talk about how we both have acting experiences.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. I don't think I've watched a full episode of it. I've just seen like stuff that showed up on TikTok and everything.
Right.
Which, you know, are never longer than like 30 seconds to a minute. So
you no longer have the attention span to watch an entire talk show.
I've never been a talk show person.
Yeah, me neither.
Especially because they just always get the weirdest people to host them. So
mostly, I think all those things work much better as just audio. That's why, I mean, I like podcast interview shows much better than TV ones. Because there's, if you think about it, there's really nothing to watch. You know what I mean?
I mean, because that's what they do these days, is they always figure out something weird and zany to throw into the show for, like, the person who's being interviewed to participate in.
Oh, some skit or whatever?
Yeah, and it's very, like, odd where it's like, oh, this feels so forced.
The only show that I ever worked on was Conan O'Brien. Like, he was good at those.
Yeah.
Like, the masturbating bear or whatever. You know, like... Guess he went way the fuck out, you know?
I mean, he was a writer for a long time, so yeah.
Yeah.
But, no. The other ones I just never really got into.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Conan O'Brien was the only one that I ever really liked. But, like, the old... At the beginning of Conan O'Brien, when Andy Richter was always on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because you need the sidekick, as we know from this show.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, because... Can you imagine what a disaster this podcast would be if you didn't have me as your sidekick?
You know, I'm not really sure who's the sidekick in this dynamic, but I think we work well.
We take turns.
Exactly. That's why it's not just my show, it's our show.
Kind of like The Signal, like you keep getting different people's perspective, yeah. Different people's stories.
Different people's delusions, really.
That's right. This is our... shared delusion, this show, and our millions of listeners.
I think that really is the best way to describe this podcast. Like, you nailed it.
Our shared delusion. Yeah. It's fine. That's one of the times the technology did something good, you know? It creates platforms for people to have their little hobby projects. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to please anybody but themselves.
And I think that's the same thing as, like, say, the blog or the newsletter or whatever. You're just putting stuff out there, and maybe if it's heard, it's heard. If it's not, it's not.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, this is like series of conversations I had before the one I recorded with you, with my friend about her childhood. She was asking, like, so does anybody listen to this? When it finally occurred to her that I was going to be, she agreed to me putting out these conversations on the podcast. She's like, oh shit, somebody's going to hear it. And I told her, yeah, somebody will maybe, but I don't know who. And I don't really care. It's not, you know, it would be nice to have a reaction, but it's not why I don't think that's why you do things.
Mm-hmm.
If you do things just for the reaction, then you pay market researchers and you're putting out products, and I'm not personally that interested in putting out products. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how I do things.
Dimitri's out there for the art.
That's right. Just the art.
Perfect.
Mostly for my own detriment, to my own detriment, unfortunately. But yeah, yeah. I wish I was better at the other shit, at the marketing. If I was, I'd still be on the platforms, you know.
I don't think I'm so hot at it either. But
you're better at it than me.
It's not a high bar.
No. It's pretty low, but. Yeah, I mean, you don't strike me as somebody who, like, loves it the way a lot of other people do.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where I was really happy for the month of October, where I was just handing things off to other people, because I was like, I just really don't want to do it.
Well, maybe that's, like, a clue to you to delegate more. I don't know, you know?
It is something that I think I would like to probably do more, and be like, who else would like to handle this month?
Yeah, like... Yeah, like I was saying the other time, at some point maybe, you know, I'll try to find somebody to do like a Instagram or whatever for me, you know. Maybe there's some point in that, I don't know. I have to research that. I have to find somebody that I can trust, basically, you know.
Someone who's not going to say totally idiotic shit.
And that's actually does the job, you know.
Basically.
Yeah, so that's tough. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen.
Who knows?
All right. Well, we'll reconvene in a couple of weeks to talk about the fast zombies or whatever they are.